And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks, presented by Zaxby's. Happy Thanksgiving week. Buck, how you doing?
Man, I'm good. I'm good. It's always an exciting time of year. I think Thanksgiving is like probably my favorite holiday, only because of like you naturally have like you're grateful for all the things that you've had happen to you over the course of the year, the people that are around, whatever. But then also it's synonymous with football. So what other day did you get where everyone knows, shut down everything, there are three football games on, no one can talk, this is what we're doing. We eat, we watch sports. We eat, we watch games. Like that's, like what other day is, you have another day that's like that, you know?
It's pretty solid. That's a solid day. I want to tell everybody, we're going to talk a little bit about what we saw from that game last night with Tampa and the Rams and kind of what that means for them going forward, as well as a little bit about what we saw at the college level this last week. I'd like to dig into that. But we got to start with our priorities because we've been talking about Thanksgiving here, Buck. Do you add ham to the mix, or are you a turkey only guy for Thanksgiving?
Okay, so like DJ, like over the past year, I've given up like all meat except fish, right? So this would be okay. The first.
Oh, I didn't know this. I didn't know this about you.
Quietly, right? Because my daughter went vegan and vegetarian, so I was trying to like be supportive, kind of like you did. Yeah. I think you did that once.
Yeah,
So I was doing that, and so this would be the first time where I don't know. It's going to be a carb load. It's going to be a lot of stuffing, a lot of mac and cheese, maybe like candy yams, sweet potatoes, and stuff like that, but. No, in normal times, it has always been like a turkey deal. Like going all the way back to my mom's house, it's always been turkey. Ham is more, I think for us, was always Christmas. Like we would have ham for Christmas, but more turkey and all the other stuff. And I got to tell you this because this is funny. Like, I hate to admit this, but I think story time is always funny. So it wasn't until I was in college, right? Like I used to love my mom's cranberry sauce, right? Mm. Love the cranberry sauce or whatever. And I would just like... we would have stuffing and turkey and cranberry sauce or whatever. But like for the long, I mean, forever, always like, man, like how does she get this design in the cranberry sauce? Like there's this little, these ridges in the cranberry sauce. Like I never understood, like, did she put it in a mold or whatever? Yeah. DJ, it was I was 25 years old when I realized my mom was giving us cranberry sauce out the can. It was the canned cranberry sauce. And I never knew. I never knew, but it was.
How did she do this? How did she pull this off?
How did she pull this off? Like what? I never see the mold. Like she's down here early, but I never see it deal with the cranberry sauce. But then, boop, voila, warm.
There it is. Oh, that's fantastic. So here's my, we were just talking about this. So we get the honey baked ham.
Oh,
we do it for Thanksgiving and for Christmas. It's a big time ham, as we would say in Scott. It's 8-0 ham, perfect grape. But my favorite part of the day is it's not the Thanksgiving meal. It's the leftovers.
Oh, yeah.
And then when you can go with a little honey baked ham, and then listen to this now. You gotta let this sink in. It's a little bit of ham, a little bit of mashed potatoes inside a Hawaiian roll, and that is your
Damn.
In business.
So I think I've been put on the Hawaiian rolls maybe within the last decade, right?
Yeah.
The Hawaiian rolls first I was put on, like, I don't know if you've ever had like pork sliders in a Hawaiian roll.
Come on.
Like,
yeah.
Like so
North
so
Carolina.
So that was the original thing. But then I was like, man, you add those two, because I'm from North Carolina, I'm so used to like brown and serve rolls. Like that was always a thing. We had like a 3 dozen brown and serve rolls for Thanksgiving. But now you put like the little Hawaiian roll, like that has like a little touch. And then you're right. The best part of Thanksgiving is not like the first meal. It's the late night Thursday night meal when you come back around 8 o'clock and you redo it. And then it's Friday. It's Friday when you pull it all out of the refrigerator.
You got a little college football on Friday.
Yeah. And then we can get to it. And once again, it is a football weekend. And the fact that the NFL added the 8 o'clock game, the late night game, because before it used to just be the 12 and the 4, but now we got the 8 o'clock game. So it's like football all day. You wake up early. It's always West Coast time. It's a 9 o'clock game that is.
Get you some Lions. Get you a bad Lions game. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Like it doesn't get better than that. Now I'm sad because this year I don't, like, obviously with the pandemic, I used to always say, oh, I can go run the 5K and then that frees me up. Yeah, that frees me up. I can just eat whatever I want because I've run 3 miles. I'm good. But without that, I have to figure out another way to substitute the calories that I'm going to take in.
You want to hear the saddest? We'll get to the football here. Trust me, guys. We'll get to the football in a second. But the saddest thing, this is how sad it is. We were talking about, you know, playing basketball before we came on and talking about turkey trots. Buck, my back had been a little bit sore. I hadn't been in a jacuzzi in a while. So I was like, you know, I'm going to get in the jacuzzi. So I fired that up yesterday. Well, I hadn't been in so long that I kind of forgot where the step was when you step in.
Oh.
Boom, boom, boom. So I tumble in there. I woke up this morning, man. Like, yes. My knee legitimately hurts. And I'm like, I don't think I can go to the doctor and be like, hey, you check this thing out. What happened? Were you playing basketball? Were you a little turkey football day? Like, what do we got here? Like, no, just tripped on the way into the jacuzzi. That's how I went down.
Wow.
I'm getting old, man.
No, but DJ, there are times like now I've fallen down the steps and don't know how.
What's wrong with us?
Like, and I'm saying I've fallen down the steps while looking at my foot hit the step. Like, not, oh, I'm blind, just looking around or whatever. Yeah. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm going to take a step down. Whoa! And I fall. Like, I think that's just a part of, like, inching towards being older. I don't know. But, like,
yeah, it's depressing is what it is.
It's not a lot of fun.
What did you think of the game last night?
You know, I think it's interesting. I really like the Rams and the way the Rams are positioned. I think Sean McVay has grown a lot as a play caller. I think what he did in the offseason, even though initially I disagree with it because I thought Wade Phillips was an outstanding defensive coordinator, and he made a lot of changes on his staff, but he had a plan. And I think the one thing that I can respect, and this comes from the scouting business, whatever decision you make, whatever opinion you have it with conviction. And if you have it with conviction and you believe this is the best for your thoughts and your teams or whatever, and you're willing to stand on the table for your decision, love it. And I think his conviction that they needed just like a change or something different, I think has worked out. Because when I look at this team is a physical team on both sides of the ball. Even though there's a lot of smoke and mirrors to what they do offensively, at the end of the day, they are an zone running team. They want to get to the edges. They want to use the run game to set up these explosive plays in the passing game. I think they're perfectly constructed. Even though I don't think the offensive line is A-level, I think the offensive line and the skill positions, the wide receivers they have that are terrific route runners, every one of them. Mm-hmm. Every one of them can run routes.
I want to get to that in a second.
That the running game. And then defensively, man, the young defensive coordinator, Brandon Staley, like, it's funny because you hear all these things where you wonder, hey, he's a Vic Fangio disciple, but then you wonder, like, does he really know or whatever? And then you dig into his background. He was a college quarterback who then at the lower level was a defensive coordinator, figured out how to do some simulated pressures and those things, joined up with Vic Fangio, learned some of the things that they're doing. And when I look at this defense, what's remarkable to me about this defense, they generate a lot of pressure, but it's not a high-risk defense to me. They do a lot of simulated pressure where it looks like you bring in five or more, but really only four guys are coming. They have max zones. And then the way that he is deployed, Jalen Ramsey, I think is the perfect way that you deploy a shutdown corner, one that is making $19, $20 million. He is using him the right way. And it's not all man-to-man. It's not all, hey, he's going to travel and do all this thing. He does that, but sometimes they play zone around him. They just do a very creative job, and I think it's working. And I think this team is really tough, man. I know we haven't called them a Super Bowl contender, but if they have the right path in the playoffs, they absolutely can be in the Super Bowl.
So a couple things about the team building thing I want to get to on the Rams here, because I thought was going through my mind last night, because we always talk about building a basketball team with receivers, right? It goes back to our conversation with Coach Billick. You want guys, small guys, big guys, fast guys, you know, post-up guys. They are, I guess we would say, like the Warriors, right? I mean, they're all carbon copies of one another. When you think about Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, Van Jefferson, they all run about the same. They're all fantastic route runners. None of them are 6'3", 6'4", you know, power forward type guys, but they're interchangeable and they all can uncover. They can all separate and they all have phenomenal hands. And I think you'd add toughness to the mix as well. But I don't know where you are on that, but to me, that looks like it almost kind of flies in the face of that theory and says we're going to get carbon copies that we can interchange as much as possible.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a lot of value to that. I think there are a couple of different things that go along with that in terms of the interchangeability. I also think there is something to be said for skill over power.
Yeah.
Their skill, much like, and I think the Warriors example is terrific because when the Warriors were really having their run, it wasn't about them imposing their will physically on you. It was from a skill standpoint, they were so much superior to those that were defending them that they always could get points. Steph Curry could take it all the way at the half court and shoot. Klay Thompson could do the same. Draymond was maybe the rugged enforcer, but the majority of the team that they had around them, Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston, those guys were skilled players that could put the ball on the floor and do things to get a bucket. When I look at the Rams, all of those guys are outstanding route runners, from Woods to Kupp to Josh Reynolds to Van Jefferson. And so now you have four guys that can run routes. You have Tyler Higbee, who also can run routes. Man, it puts a lot of strain on the defense, because you know it, DJ, when we're scouting, how hard is it when we're looking at DBs in the draft? We can find the first tier. Yeah. And then we can find the second tier. But after that, it's a significant drop off. It is drastically different than the level of play and performance and skill that we see from wide receivers.
Wide receivers were like, wait a second, this guy didn't get picked? Like, nah, man. Yeah. 57 of them got picked. He wasn't one of them. And he's pretty good.
Right. So they're able to dictate the terms when they do go 11 personnel and you put your nickel and dime out there. They know at some point there's an advantage because their skilled player is going to wear out someone who's inferior on the field, and they've been able to take advantage of it.
Other thing that I would say that's interesting, I think you got a little glimpse of this in Hard Knocks. I think they do a better job with the cadence than any other team. They work on it. It sounds different. When you listen to Jared Goff, the cadence is totally different. Like, you can't get a beat on when the ball's coming. But so that eliminates a little bit of the jump you get up front. You can't kind of find your rhythm as a defensive lineman, but also with all the pre-snap movement and shifts. Mm-hmm. You can speak to that from being on the defensive side of the ball, Buck, just how that stresses your communication with your alignment and your assignment.
So a couple of different things that you bring up, because I think when you bring in the cadence, I think you also have to add in the tempo and the varying tempos, because I think they use the tempo advantage better than anybody else. They go fast, they go slow, they double count you, they hard count you, they do so much stuff that you're always thinking. And so it takes away your aggressiveness up front. So then the front four is afraid to go on first movement because you get the penalty. Then in the back end, what they do is they bring so much eye candy, shift, motion, blur motion, which is motion that is right at the snap coming across behind the quarterback. Like, they make it where you're trying to determine, man, if we man up, potentially we could be out leveraged depending on a creative motion that you have. So then you play a static zone defense because you want to be able to adjust and bump over instead of run over, so you can keep your eyes on where everyone is. But then you make the game so easy for the quarterback, because the quarterback is like, oh, I get all zone. Cool. I just need to find a guy in the open area. And, you know, when I look at the way that is constructed, the offense is, and it's just a challenge. And for as much as we used to talk about the offense being high powered and explosive, and I know Sean McVay wants to get back to that, that version that we saw a couple years ago, 2018, when it was kind of like the craze of the league. Yeah. I think this version is actually a little more difficult to defend, and it's very similar to the way the Raiders play. They retain possession. I don't know if you're a soccer fan, but like, when you watch soccer and you watch like the World Cup, there's some teams that, like being in North Carolina, when I watched the women play, they would be a kick and run team. So they kick long balls and their athleticism would run and chase it down. The teams that would give them problems would be teams that are possession teams, 11 or 12 passes before they take a shot on goal. Yeah. That's what the Rams are to me. 10, 11, 12 play drives. They wear you out with the volume of plays. And over time, not only physically does it fatigue you, but mentally trying to stay up on all the things that you're doing. I think you eventually blow a gasket, and that's when the big plays happen.
And I laugh a little bit, because even the negative plays, like if you see on some of the jet motion fly sweep stuff, you'll see a defensive end that'll make a tackle for loss. They lose 3 yards. And the thought, I think a lot of people look at that and go like, oh, man, that's a terrible play. They just lost 3 yards. And I'm sitting here going, no, that end is having to widen out with him right now. So now the next time we run that motion, we want to throw the ball. He's got no pass rush whatsoever because he's enamored. He's got to worry about this. So you're just planning. I think it's just like, look, I've gotten into a little bit of the flower thing in the backyard over the last year. Like, they just kind of plant little seeds throughout the game, and it ends up paying off in terms of how they can manipulate you defensively.
Yeah, they do so much. They stress you so much. And, you know, it's funny. This goes back to a conversation that I had with Dan Hawkins, who's the head coach of UC Davis. But he is one of the founding fathers of the fly sweep, jet sweep action. And what Dan had talked to me, this is years ago when a couple years ago in high school, I had a question for him about utilizing the fly sweep or whatever. And he said, well, the key to the fly sweep is you have to be able to use it in every aspect. He said, so when you think about teams that run the fly sweep, you need to run the fly sweep and hand it to them. You need to run the fly sweep and run the ball to the side of the motion. You need to fly sweep it, run it away from the motion. You need to fly sweep it and throw the ball to where the motion is going. And you need to run the fly sweep and throw it away from the motion. He said you have to have those five different elements of the fly sweep, because what it does, it puts constraints on the defense. And as much as we talk about stretching the defense vertically, where the fly sweep, jet sweep motion now stretches you horizontally. And so when you stretch them horizontally and you attack vertically with the running game, the passing game, they got the bootleg game and all those other things. DJ, how do you have enough time to prepare for all of the things that could happen? Yeah. You don't. But for the offense, it's simple. They're running the same concepts. When you study them, they're running the same concepts over and over and over again. The bootleg passing game is the same. They change up who's involved in it. They run the deep over, deep post combination from reduced splits and tight splits and various alignments. And now, because they're using more 12 personnel with two tight ends on the field, it's really made them a very, very difficult and challenging team to defend.
Yeah, you know, look at the numbers. Cup, 13 for a buck 45. Woods, 12 for 130. So that's a pretty good distribution there between those guys. Cooper had 11 for 145. But, they were phenomenal in that game. Go to the defensive side of the ball. You mentioned a little bit talking about the job that they've done over there. Interesting, because to me, I think what that shows, what the Rams show, is that it's okay to invest big dollar sums in individual players, which can lead to a lopsided defense, right? You can't have seven of those guys. You only have a couple. But it shows to me the importance of where they spent the money. And it goes back to the draft, right? We look at pass rushers, especially an inside pass rusher, which is the rarest to find, and Aaron Donald is best in the business. And then you look at corner. That's why when you look in the draft, you see pass rushers and corners go in the top five. You see those guys get all the way up there because they're premier positions. So while that money sunk into those two guys probably has cost them some other players, they've made good investments in free agency. Look at Floyd, some of the moves that they've made, short-term free agents to come in. They've had younger players drafted later on, even free agents that have played well sprinkled around them. But I think it just shows you it's okay to have those high ticket items. What you can't do, and this goes back to like the Jets, you can't spend all that money on CJ Mosley. You know, like that's not an impact. That's not an impact enough player to be sinking that much money into.
No, there are a couple of things that I want to piggyback off of that. I think it is great that you talk about identifying the players that you want to pay, and those are marquee positions. And I think, DJ, as we continue to go forward and as we look at all these other teams and we talk about team building, whatever, I think it's more apparent now than ever that there are a handful of positions that are more valued than others. And we always talk about it on defense. You have to have, ideally, two pass rushers. And they've discovered a second pass rusher in Leonard Floyd. They found a way to get Leonard Floyd. Remember, Leonard Floyd was a top 10 pick. So they have, in theory, two blue chip players on the front line. And
never quit on talent. Give them more chances. You give first rounders more chances, man. New environment, see what happens.
New environment, put them in the right situation, and it's worked out. Then when you think about Jalen Ramsey, so now we have two pass rushers. We have a corner. We talk about an off the ball linebacker with speed and explosiveness. Like in a perfect defense, that's what they would have. So maybe they can add like a high end linebacker, but it's working because they're putting a lot of DBs on the field and kind of getting away with it. Offensively, we continue to talk about left tackle being a critical spot. I think now you have to add the right tackle too, because so many people are putting the pass
same difference, yeah.
At lefty, I think you have to have two tackles. We know obviously about the quarterback, and then you have to determine. I think you need to have three weapons, and whatever those weapons are, they have to be high end weapons. So it could be a wide receiver, one and two. A playmaker in the backfield. It can be a tight end and all of the weapons that you have outside. But I think those weapons, and they have to be categorized as weapons, because I think Derrick Henry is an anomaly at the running back position. When I think about running back position and if I'm going to invest or put something in that, it has to be a guy who can impact the game not only as a runner but as a receiver. It has to be an Alvin Kamara type. It has to be a guy like a Christian McCaffrey. It has to be a Dalvin Cook. And I know people talk about the money that was poured into Christian McCaffrey, but for Alvin Kamara and Dalvin Cook, I think it has been more than worth its weight in gold in terms of that. But I think the team building has to be about stars. And when you get the right stars, I think the other thing that is underrated, and DJ, we know this working inside, all coaches aren't created equal. When you have a team full of stars and you're building the team like we talk about, like that star model, you better have coaches who can coach the stars.
No question.
And I will say this about the Rams. They have two coaches that are doing a great job of coaching the stars. Up front, Eric Henderson, their D-line coach, just read about how they, you know, they have their thing and they call their D-line the dogs and how they get after it or whatever. But Aaron Donald said this, and he said, I want a coach that coaches me hard, that holds me accountable and does it. Now, it's a lot easier when the star is willing to be coached, yeah. But he gets on Aaron Donald. He coaches him. He tries to refine his technique. He works on those things to see if they can squeeze even 1% more out of an elite player. And I think you look at Aaron Donald's consistency, that's not all talent. That is a combination of talent and motor and technique overwhelming people. And I think Aubrey Pleasant has done a great job in the secondary with Jalen Ramsey. And I know Jalen Ramsey and Jacksonville, they would tell you he may have been difficult to corral and contain, but some of that had to do with whoever was coaching him, not even the position coach, but the coordinator. And they have been able to get him not only to play at a high level, but to be everything that we thought he was going to be at Florida State, because he's not just a pure corner. He's a playmaker, and they use him in that playmaking role.
I think that, and this might be an oversimplification here, but I think there's also something to be said from taking guys who have a long track record of winning at the collegiate level, who have been stuck on losing teams, and then you might get some attitude issues. You might have some things pop up. And to a degree, I think with Jamal Adams, you can see that as well. I think it's better for him to go to Seattle because he came from LSU. All he did was win. All that losing takes a toll on you. Go to Seattle where they've won more. I think it's better for both parties. I think there is something to that, because we get that disgruntled label, you know, with a guy like Jalen Ramsey and say, man, he's, I don't know, he's so competitive and this guy's done nothing but win through his whole life. And now he's done nothing but really lose outside of one season in Jacksonville. Maybe if we put him in our winning environment, we could see him get going a little bit. So that to me was an example of, I think that being a good formula, it worked.
Yeah, I think it is a great formula. And I think, I mean, the word is overplayed, and it's been overplayed the last 4 or 5 years when we talk about culture. But I think, at the end of the day, DJ, like, we could talk about the money that players make or whatever. At the end of the day, they're still, in my mind, when I look at them, they're 7, 8, 9 year olds. And to put the effort and all the time that you put in to play and perform, man, it's hard when you don't win. And the things that we celebrate about a lot of players in the draft, like, we always are looking for those guys that are the alpha players, the ones that love winning. They want to win in everything that they do. When you dig into their background and you find out about their exploits, like, man, this guy was a high-level track player. Hey, on the ping pong table, he loves to compete. Talk about the guy that you see all the time, Derwin James. Derwin James is one of the best gamers in the league. Loves it, can't get enough of it, in that competitive spirit. And when you take those guys, if you don't put them in the right environment where you allow them to fully be the competitors that they are, yeah, it rubs people wrong. It goes back to, and I took this from you because you turned me on to Dave Ramsey, donkeys and thoroughbreds.
Yep.
You can't put thoroughbreds and donkeys in the same stable. It doesn't work. But when you put a bunch of thoroughbreds in a stable together, it works out. And when you think about Jalen Ramsey being on the defense with Aaron Donald and some of those other competitors that they have, it raises the level of intensity. And I think Leonard Floyd has also benefited from that, because we can say what he was at Chicago. Look, he was a big-time player at Georgia, and he played with some A-level players at Georgia. And for whatever reason, it didn't work. But with the Rams, around the people that he's around, it's working out. And so there's something to be said for that.
No doubt. All right, let's get over to the other side here real quick with Tampa. I said at the beginning of the year, I thought that Tom Brady would get off to a fast start, but I wanted to see how at 43 years old, once we get into the last, you know, quarter plus of the season, how his body would be able to maintain and how his performance would be coming down the stretch. I thought last year in New England, we saw him really fall off in the back half of the season. People said, oh, the weather's going to be better, better team around him. I get all those things. Totally true. You're 43 years old, dude. And eventually, having been in a physical activity for a long stretch of time, you're going to start to see a little bit of decline. So my question to you, Buck, is just, Is that what we're seeing, or do you see something else involved here?
No, I think that's it. And I think the thing that a lot of people have a tough time doing, and I think when you're scouting, you have to be able to separate this. You have to separate your feelings for the player and the achievements that he has to this point from the performance that we're seeing. And we've seen this the last 2 or 3 years. Late November, December, Tom Brady becomes a different player. When you go back, and everyone has always faulted, the Patriots didn't have enough weapons, they didn't do this, they didn't do that. But Tom Brady's play has declined. And if you go back and you check the last 4 games in each of the final 3 years, like, it's significantly dipped. The Patriots, even in the Super Bowl run, they started relying increasingly on the running game, power football, and asking him to make 2 or 3 plays a game as opposed to really running the entire offense through him, letting the auxiliary pieces really carry him to that point. What I worry about, and what I always worried about in Tampa, was Bruce Arians, to me, has one path to success. He wants to push it down the field. He wants to play like bombs away, and that is the way that he knows. To me, I don't think he has other clubs in his back. I don't think he has the ability to construct a power running game to say, you know what, my quarterback is a little older, he's struggling right now, here's what we're going to do. We're going to lean more into our power running. Says, hey, let's be a little more 12 and 13 heavy this week. Hey, let's introduce a little more 21 personnel. I know what we have all these shiny toys on the outside, but what we need to do is gain control of the game so we can do a little less of TB12 and allow him to be more efficient. I don't know if they can switch gears and do that. And I think when we look at the New Orleans Saints and the way that they have shifted with Taysom Hill, I think it just shows the depth of knowledge and versatility and acumen that Sean Payton has when it comes to the offensive side of the ball. Oh, I can do more. Like, I know I played this way with Drew Brees, but Taysom Hill is different, so we're going to play a completely different way. A lot of people don't have the ability to shift schemes and systems because that's all they know. And I don't know if Bruce Arians has that in him. And I think what's going to happen, you're going to see it cost the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, because playing the way that they're playing, I don't know if they can sustain it going all the way through the end of the year and the postseason.
Let me give you the troubling numbers here with them, we'll kind of roll through it here. Their leading rusher from these last few games, let's go back to October 25th, which was a big game for them. They won. They beat the Raiders 45-20. That's a big win. Fournette had 50 in that game. The next game against the Giants was a squeaker. They barely won 25-23. Fournette had 52 yards, leading rusher. They got their brains beat out by the Saints. Ronald Jones had 9 yards the game where they ran the ball four times in a kneel down. Yeah. Last week was okay. They score 46 points. Ronald Jones goes for a 192. All right. Follow that up. This week, Ronald Jones leads the team with 24 yards. So you've had one game in the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. One game in the last 5 where you've had a running back go over 52 yards. And to go to your point, that was not the formula that the Patriots had figured out to follow to get to the finish line there. I worry about this team, man. You got Kansas City coming up. You've got Minnesota, who's been a little bit up and down, but it's a dangerous team. Atlanta can score points. You've got that. Detroit, they're not very good, and you got Atlanta again. So, I mean, Kansas City, Minnesota, they could very easily be on a 3-game losing streak as they head to Atlanta.
DJ, it's going to be hard for them to get to 10 wins. And I know no one wants to hear that, but it's going to be hard for them to get to 10 wins. It's going to get increasingly harder because as teams continue to get comfortable with what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have and how they're playing and how they're basically the New England Patriots in Tampa Bay Buccaneers uniforms from an offensive standpoint, you're going to see people begin to jam the middle. They're going to dare Tom Brady to throw the ball outside. They can continue to try and pressure him up the middle. And what we're seeing now is Tom Brady's making mistakes without necessarily being pressured. And part of that is just what happens when you get older. Like, you can't do the same things that you could do when you're younger. And so it becomes different. And so this will be the biggest coaching challenge of Bruce Arians' coaching career. Can he look at the star and know, hey, my star is not what I thought he was going to be, and have the hard conversation with Tom Brady? Hey, Tom, this is the best way that we need to play to win. Can you do it in a way that isn't comfortable for you? That's the challenge that Bruce Arians has to determine. Can he do something that we haven't seen him do, which is lean into the running game, be a little more ball control and ball centric, and win that way?
Can I give you an idea here? Because to me, I think you you touched on it, being able to morph and to do different things, try different things. I look at it and say, okay, let's get together as an offensive staff and let's come up with something. I think Sean Payton's a great example. He knew Drew Brees with his play declining. Okay, we're going to start sprinkling in a little more of this Taysom Hill because it gives defense a different look. We need more. We need more weapons. We just need more juice. So we can do that creatively. And everybody has it within them. Like if you're the Tampa Bay, I'd be sitting there going, all right, guys, let's put it all on the board this week. Let's look at it. What if we play with six offensive linemen for 20 snaps this week? What if we line up and play more, you know, we play 13 personnel this week? What if we do more split back stuff? Like we've got to put in something to try and juice this up a little bit and get the run game going. I gave you the run stats. They've got to get the run game going. So there's different ways you can do that. And to me, I look at Seattle. I think Seattle was last year, the year before, they put Fant, used him as a tight end and just said, we're going to roll with six offensive linemen a bunch.
That's right. I mean, that's what the New Orleans Saints have done for years. They've done it for years. They make no bones about it. Hey, our sixth guy, the tight end can't block. So rather than ask him to do something that he's not good at, put a lineman in. Put the third offensive tackle in. We're running the ball. We'll do enough play action passes and match protection routes to keep you off of our scent.
But their team's kind of built for that. When you think about a guy like Mike Evans, just max protect, keep men, take some shots with him.
They can do that. They can do that. And I think what they run the risk of, they're kind of like a video game now where they have all these weapons and they want to do all this different stuff and they're trying to figure it out. And I just think it's very, very difficult and challenging for them to be able to pull it off. And so I do want to see them change. I do want to see them lean into the running game.
I mean, you can put Ronald Jones, let him be the wildcat. I mean, you can just sprinkle some other things like that.
You have to do some other stuff. But DJ, it also goes back to our point. We said this last week, we talked about the quarterback. Man, when your quarterback is a statuesque quarterback and he doesn't offer the ability for you to not only run the quarterback, but you can't even do the bootleg game.
Yeah.
You can't change the launch point. There's nothing you can do to throw off the defense in terms of how they blitz you, how they attack your protections, nothing, because they never see it on tape. They never see Tom Brady bootleg like Jared Goff. With the Rams, you at least have to account for, man.
They rolled him. A lot of sprint outs last night with Jared Goff. Just get him out of there.
Get him out. It changes the thing. And so they're very, very limited with what they can do. And so huge challenge for Byron Leftwich, Bruce Arians, Tom Brady. They have to get on board. And I like they have to get in the room and get on the board. And what can we do with the pieces that we have? All right. How can we give our team the best chance of winning each and every week? And I think they thought that they could do the Kansas City Chiefs thing and they're going to outscore them or whatever. But it's different, man, when Tom Brady's 43 and he's not the young, vibrant Patrick Mahomes out there running around making it happen. Even when the play call is wrong, he can make it right.
No doubt. All right, let's switch gears here quick. We just want to touch on Justin Fields, your thoughts there, what we saw from him against Indiana.
You know, I love the fact that Justin Fields struggled in the game. And the reason why is because, look, it had been very, very easy for him early in the year. We've seen him rip up and down the field, but we hadn't seen the quarterback struggle. And I think we're seeing this obviously in the league. How do young quarterbacks handle struggles? How do they perform after they have a turnover or two? Or three. And what I saw from Indiana is Indiana did some creative stuff that is really what they do in the league. They did a lot of simulated pressure. So they bring four, but that fourth rusher can come from the second level. They drop maximum in the coverage. So there's seven defenders in the coverage. And what they're doing, they're playing games with your quarterback. Can he determine where the hole is? You know, it's almost like being Dave and Buster's.
It's whack-a-mole. Yeah.
Where is it coming from? Who's coming? Where is it coming from? And can I figure it out quick enough to get the ball out in timely situations? You've pointed this out about Justin Fields. When he's not able to throw on time, he can get into trouble trying to find a second and third read. Yeah. And the whack-a-mole defense that Indiana was doing was making it hard for him to find his initial read. And as he held onto the ball longer, the mistakes began to happen because naturally you're a high-end quarterback. You're trying to do too much and the mistakes happen. And so it was a good test. It was a thing that I want to say we saw LSU did some of these tactics against Trevor Lawrence last year and kind of befuddled him a little bit because it is very complex to kind of figure out who's coming. And I think we saw that from him. That said, I will say my opinion doesn't change on him because what I liked about how he responded, I saw the competitor still continue to compete. I saw the athleticism and the creativity with his legs stand out more. And look, I saw him acknowledge on the sideline, whew, I'm having a tough day today. But I didn't see him completely fall apart. And I think those are the things that you look for. Are they going to fall apart during those difficult moments?
Yeah. You know, I thought it was, you know, just some of those issues that you had when he gets stuck on one, if one's not there, hold the ball. Then you saw him just kind of force things. So I get all of it comes back to the same thing as my only concern with him really is just kind of vision, you know, just his overall vision. He's big, strong. He's accurate when everything lines up clean. He can extend plays. He's phenomenal in terms of being able to escape and make things happen, which I love. We just talked about how limiting it can be when you don't have a guy that can do that. He gives you all that. But I still think Trevor Lawrence is kind of, he's over here. And I think I look at what's going on with Justin Fields and I'm still looking at him with Trey Lance and now Zach Wilson, like those guys, I'm trying to sort through those guys right now.
Yeah. Well, I can see that. And I think I'm trying to figure this out without it coming off wrong. I think here's what everyone can benefit when you're thinking about Justin Fields and even Trey Lance. Trey Lance is a little different than Justin Fields. But I think for Justin Fields, what I would do if I'm a team considering Justin Fields, I am looking at Josh Allen plus in terms of building an offense and a game plan. Because Josh Allen can get stuck when the initial read isn't there. Yeah. But what the Buffalo Bills have done over a 3-year period, they figured out ways to build an offense that really reduces those instances. They surrounded them with talented weapons.
They've a clear picture.
They've leaned into the running game, the quarterback design run, doing some of those things. I think the exact way that the Buffalo Bills play with Josh Allen, I think that's your starting point for how you build out your plan for getting Justin Fields onto the field and succeeding. I think he has a little more than Josh Fields, but I think that's the starting point in terms of, okay, how can we build this out to enable him to have a tremendous amount of success very, very early in his career?
Yeah, I mean, the challenge is, I mean, I don't know that he's really going to see, you know, another defense that can give him any type of trouble until he gets to the playoff.
No.
So, and that's the, you know, it's a challenge. There's unique challenges this year because you've got BYU who, you know, the schedule's not very good. You've got Trey Lance who played one game. You know, Trevor Lawrence is, the ACC is not great. He missed the Notre Dame game, which would have been the great opportunity to see him against that defense. You know, with Trevor Lawrence, I'm anxious to see the numbers, and we'll get a chance as we go towards the draft to break all this stuff down from the film and the numbers. But I've heard some stuff with people that are really starting to do the analytics on Trevor Lawrence that the concern there is like a higher percentage of throws inside 5 yards of like anybody out there, you know, at least in this draft class, like a high percentage of bubbles. So
yeah,
you got to cut through all that stuff to be able to evaluate him. Now, we've seen the good stuff down the field as well, but I'm just saying there's going to be these unique little challenges and questions that we got to get answered on all these quarterbacks.
But you know what makes it okay? So, you know, we live in the comparison business, and I think the greatest thing that has happened when it comes to the evaluation of Trevor Lawrence, and I don't want people to overreact, but Justin Herbert's success,
yeah,
to me makes it easier for me to do the full evaluation on Trevor Lawrence. Because DJ, prior to Justin Herbert succeeding, we had a tough time finding a quarterback that was 6'6 or taller, have success in the league. Like Joe Flacco would be that, but I couldn't make the comparison with Trevor Lawrence and Joe Flacco because their games are different.
Yeah.
Now, when I look at Justin Herbert play on Sundays, I can look at Trevor Lawrence and say, yeah, that worked. And I can say that while acknowledging Trevor Lawrence is more talented, I guess, in theory, than Justin Herbert. But I think now you have a clearer blueprint for Trevor Lawrence. I think before when we're speculating, because people were throwing out there like, hey, John Elway and Andrew Luck or whatever. I don't think Trevor Lawrence plays like that. I don't think he plays like Andrew Luck. I don't think he does that. And so I was worried about running the risk of not misevaluating him, but not categorizing him in the right facet. And so you think you're getting one thing, when he shows up, he's actually something else. And I think what Justin Herbert's emergence has done has given us a blueprint for how to play with Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, and I thought you were going to go to the offense, you know, that Oregon offense. It was being able to avoid scouting the offense and scout the player because it's not his fault. They were, you know, they didn't really cut him loose at Oregon with the way they played. And with Trevor Lawrence, you know, you can say, okay, it's a lot of these underneath stuff, quick hitters, screens, tunnel screens, all that stuff, bubbles. But Yeah, that's not his fault. And he's got the double bonus because he's got the comparison of Herbert with the size, and then he's got Deshaun Watson coming out of the same system. So you've got two guys that have had a lot of success that bodes very well for Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, because the predictive analysis, right? So you're like looking at Justin Herbert and you're checking off those things, and we'll see at the combine because he's going to test well. And look, Justin Herbert was a pretty good athlete. We knew he was a good athlete, being a three-sport standout in high school and those things. Trevor Lawrence can run the ball and do those things. He's obviously smart as a whip because those around him will talk about how he commands the offense and how smart he is when it comes to his football IQ. And then the leadership ability that he displayed, not only on the field, but throughout this offseason, really stepping into and embracing being the face of the franchise down at Clemson, I think that bodes well. And so the one thing that I would say, Herbert, in terms of the evaluation that may have helped him, Herbert being a senior, being able to go to the Senior Bowl, even though we didn't really get the full battery because we didn't really see a pro day and those things, those extra things kind of helped him. We won't get that benefit with Trevor Lawrence. We know he's going to be number one, but we won't get that benefit in terms of just projecting fully what he's going to be at the next level.
Yeah, and I think we have to change our mindset with these guys over the last couple of years because we say they're going to test well. Fuck, these top quarterbacks don't test anymore. I mean, they don't. Lamar Jackson didn't run a 40. Joe Burrow didn't do anything. Like, they don't do anything.
No, and I think of all the positions, I think that's the one position that you can kind of be like, I'm okay with. But I think it requires you to spend a lot more time. And I think the beauty of it is now the technology gives you more time with Zoom calls and all that other stuff. Yeah. Before we used to talk about the visits. Now when you're a coach – an evaluator, you can get these guys on 3-4 Zooms and begin to talk to them and put them on the board and really get a feel for how they are and track their progress over the course of the off season with the things that you ask them to brush up on. And so I think by the end of it, we'll be good. We'll kind of see where he is.
Here's my assignment I'm going to give myself here so I can get this by the next week or two. I'm gonna try and tap into some sources, and I'm gonna see if I can hunt down GPS numbers on Lawrence and Fields. Who do you think right now? If I were, let's just put it out there right now. Who do you think will have the faster number on the GPS?
I think Justin Fields will have the faster. Man, I don't know. You know, because
I'm kind of curious to see what Lawrence was running against Ohio State. That's a lot of speed on that field. He was running away from everybody
and the size too. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, he's sneaky. He gets up so much ground so quickly with that stride.
Yeah, that's a good one. But DJ, the funny thing with these guys is they've always been linked, one and two forever.
We saw him up at the opening.
I mean, forever. And you know what's so funny about the opening and how things change? During that, like if we go through it, Justin Fields was working with Gerard Johnson, who was coaching now with the Indianapolis Colts. And what JJ was doing is he was using what they call a pure progression read system. And so it's not necessarily 1-3. It's kind of like the way some NFL routes are. It kind of goes from east to west or west to east. And the receivers just kind of come into your line of sight. Like you look left and you just kind of almost like if you think about the sprinkler in your yard, it just kind of works like that. Justin Fields crushed that kind of stuff. Pure progression reads, hey, give me a deep comeback with a deep over with a dig coming on the backside. So it's left for comeback, deep over, bang, to my dig. Killed it. Mm-hmm. Trevor Lawrence didn't excel in that as much. And when he would get stuck, his check down was the deep ball.
Interesting.
And
then,
like, he gets, I'm going to throw it down the field. I'm going to throw it over the top of the defense. He would really rely on the talent. And then you see him in Clemson, and you see him kind of progress and do a little bit more. So it'll be, man, it's going to be fascinating with all these quarterbacks when we get them up under the hood and really dig into them. And then not only doing that, but then when we finally are able to unwrap the Christmas gifts and see them play at the next level and how they perform, because I think we've been pleasantly surprised by Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, those guys. I kind of have to put an asterisk now with Tua Tagovailoa because what they did the other day completely –
I don't try to make sense of that one.
I don't even know how to make sense of it. So it's a different deal.
All right. Well, we do have another episode coming this week. I think in some years past, we've only done two during Thanksgiving week, but we're going to give you three. And the episode we've got coming up next is going to be Bucky's conversation with his good friend, Trent Dilfer, our good friend, Trent Dilfer, who I believe is his high school team is still playing. I think maybe in the state championship in Tennessee.
I think they are in the state championship. So I want to, I want to pick his brain a little bit because this is his second year and he kind of figured it all out. They're doing a really, really good job. They're in the state title game, and it's been great. And so I can't wait to talk to him about what he's doing personally, but also because he knows all these young quarterbacks, the ones that we're talking about, Fields, Trevor Lawrence, and Trey Lance, but then also the young guys that are playing, from Joe Burrow to Justin Herbert to Tua Tagovailoa, just what he sees from those guys and how they are progressing in his mind.
All right, so be on the lookout for that one. That'll be up before Thanksgiving here. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Thank you guys so much for hanging with us. It's been fun. Don't forget, get you some ham as well, though. It's not just a turkey holiday here. Get on that honey-baked ham. Nothing wrong with that. All right, that's going to do it for us. He's Bucky Brooks. I'm Daniel Jeremiah. Thanks for listening to Move the Sticks, presented by Zaxby's.